Welcome to Slow News Day with Kevin Clark. I'm Kevin Clark. Slow News Day debutante Josh Allen, regular friend Lindsey Jones. Let's not waste any more time. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Josh Allen.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Josh Allen, one of the best quarterbacks in football, Madden cover star. What's going on, buddy?
Just hanging out, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy you're here. Let's start here. When I talk to people around the league about Madden or college football, depending on what your deal was when you were 14 years old, they learn ball from it, frankly. Matt LaFleur is a good example of somebody who said, I just learned from video games. And I'm curious where you come in on that. Like, how much ball did you learn from Madden when you're just a kid just trying to figure out coverage schemes, defenses, that kind of thing?
I mean, yeah, I mean, as a kid, I played it so much that I picked up on those things, right? What the defenses were doing, you know, what cover two and cover three and cover one, what they all meant. But even the rules of the game, right? Like just the intricacies of offsides or, you know, illegal downfield pass because I was running, I crossed the line of scrimmage. So just the little things that not many kids knew that when I was playing the game of football, I had a better grasp of what was going on and why things were happening, why holding was called. So I felt like it did give me a step up, you know, in terms of early football life.
That's interesting. I heard through the grapevine that you used to control Ken Dorsey, your offensive coordinator. Tell me about that and why he was your QB.
Yeah, that's probably a big question is why. he's 38-2 as a college quarterback. Let's not forget that. So he was on the 49ers. And I believe the quarterback that they had before, who was the first string, it was either Tim Rattay or Sean Hill. Mm-hmm. But Dorsey, he had more speed than them. So I'd always go and substitute Dorsey and put him as the first string guy. So it's just kind of small world, full circle. How now he's kind of controlling me on the field.
That seems like a low bar to clear, brother. Ken Dorsey had the most speed on the depth chart?
He did. He did.
Wow.
We can fact check that, I think.
No, I mean, I just can't believe that shows how much the game has changed, I guess. That shows how much the game has changed. All right, so let's get into, speaking of Ken Dorsey and the 2023 Bills, some self-scouting here. You do a great job. We've talked a bunch in August with our buddy Kevin right nearby about the season going ahead, and you're always good at self-scouting and understanding what you need to improve on. If you're watching Josh Allen in 2022, you saw what?
I saw a guy that was trying to make plays. There's a couple times where my eyes were in the right spot. Understanding my concepts more going forward is what I'm doing. And I think we're doing a great job as a staff in terms of finding the concepts that are working for us and that have worked well in the past for us and continuing to improve on those and maybe getting away from the stuff that we didn't do well last year. And everything, again, is going to have statistics and data that backs up really our claims there. So just trying to understand that and then just be more efficient, you know, holding on to the football when I need to and not taking the hits, you know, not forcing balls and, you know, turning the ball over. And I think, you know, if you look at basically all the statistics in the league, we're top five in every major category. And then you add in all the turnovers that we had. If you take those back and you allow us to utilize those possessions, who knows, you know, what we're capable on offense. So we understand that. I got to be more efficient. I got to be better with the football. But again, I think some of the things that we do, some of the off-platform things that I do helps those numbers as well. So there's always this little, you know, give and take on when you need to be aggressive and when you need to be conservative.
when you talk about efficiency and obviously taking care of the ball and all of that stuff, what is the mental part of it? You mentioned the ALF platform stuff helps. Like, you are one of the best improvisers in the history of modern football. So what's the push and pull as far as, okay, I need to take care of the ball, but I don't want to change as a person and as a player in my mentality. What's the push and pull there, Josh?
Yeah, I think understanding situational football to the best of my ability, you know, if it's a late game, we need something to happen, allowing myself to kind of flip a switch and be like, all right, you gotta make something happen here. Or if it's, you know, first possession of the game, it's 0-0 game, our defense has been playing good throughout the year, depending on really who's on the other side of the ball. Like, there's a lot of different factors that go into it. Just understanding those factors and trying to apply it in real time, which isn't always easy, and it's easier said than done. But having a clear plan with my coaching staff and my head coach in terms of, you know, when do I have the green light? When can I turn it on? And then when should I be that the conservative guy that's like, you know what, let's not force anything here. If it's a punt, it's a punt. You know, ending every drive in a kick is always a positive thing. But there are definitely times where you need to turn that on and you need to make a play and, you know, inspire teammates.
You know, it's interesting. You guys kind of got away from the quick game last year. Your average depth of target went up a little bit. You were going deeper. Is there in your head like a schematic happy medium that you're looking for this year?
I mean, I definitely think you can say that. I think the more efficient passes are going to be the ones that are closer to the line of scrimmage in theory, right? But there's also a lot of plays to be made that are down the field. And because of the guys that we have outside, you talk about Stephon Diggs, who I think is the greatest receiver in the game right now. You have Gabe Davis, who his average depth of reception is, I think, number two in the league behind Jalen Waddle. So guys that can go downfield and make plays, Dawson Knox, a vertical threat. So you don't want to take that away from the guys that are really good at that. But like you said, the happy medium of finding some of these completions that are like catch and run and allowing guys like on our team now, Khalil Shakir and Deonte Hardy and then Dalton Kincaid to catch and run and have those opportunities to make these big plays without having to put too much work into it, where they can catch and run and get that rack for us.
All right. What's the best you've ever felt on a football field? Like, give me your favorite play, the play that if you get to take one play with you into the afterlife to watch for all eternity, it's this one.
So this is my favorite play, or like the play that
your favorite play, your favorite play that you ever run with you know, with your teammates winning, doesn't, whatever the circumstances were, you get to bring one play with you to the afterlife to watch over and over again. What is it?
I think it's the 98-yard touchdown to Gabe Davis last year against the Steelers into the wind. It's 3rd and 14. Dorsey calls a big play, and you know, not many people in that situation would call that. So the steals that he had to be able to call that play there and allow us to execute it. And then Gabe obviously runs a good route and throw it and get hit by Minka Fitzpatrick. But I'm laying there in the end zone and I can see on the big screen Gabe running and there's nobody going to catch him. So that was a pretty fun one.
Well, what's the secret to that play that nobody would understand unless you were within it? As far as scheme, as far as Gabe, as far as Dorsey, like if you're watching this and you're saying you need to know about this, what is it?
Yeah, it's an option route. So he didn't have to run a post there. He could have ran a curl. He could have ran an in cut. But based on what the safeties were doing, they doubled him and Diggs outside. So both guys had two guys on him, and he just decided to take the right angle. And if you look at the flags and the goalposts, they were moving pretty crazy. So just kind of, it's almost like a golf shot. It's a blind shot sometimes where it's like hit it and hopefully that it's close to the pin. So, but I just throw it up there and let Gabe Davis run under it.
It's a crazy time to be a quarterback in the AFC right now, because not only do you have Patrick and Joe, but now you have Aaron and all that stuff. And I know that this is a topic that gets thrown around ad nauseum, but you guys' expectations when you're almost in Super Bowl contention every single year is the Super Bowl. How have you viewed the 2023 season because of the depth of quarterback in that conference? And it seems to me that obviously you guys have Super Bowl expectations every single year. How do you view your expectations specifically for the Bills in 2023 because of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the position at quarterback in the AFC is maybe the most, like, there's a lot of impactful quarterbacks. There's a lot of great quarterbacks, young and old, in the AFC right now. So these games are going to be dogfights, and it's not about how much you win them by. It's if you win them. So that's all we're trying to do. We're trying to score one more point than our opponent. you know, as a quarterback, I'm not really looking at who's on the other side of the football. I don't play them. I play their defense and their defensive coordinator. So, but there is certain things that will influence, you know, play calling and decision-making based on who is over there. So, right. If, I mean, we don't want to give the ball back to them. We don't want to give those guys short fields. But every game is going to be a dogfight, and we got to go into those games with that mentality of just, you know, let's score one more point than the opposing team.
You looking forward to having Aaron Rodgers in the division?
I am. I've gotten to know Aaron over the last couple of years, and I'd consider us, you know, fairly close. And I don't say we text on the regular, but I FaceTime him. I don't really call him all that much. I FaceTime him. He usually answers, which is a big plus. I know he doesn't answer a lot of people.
Wait, that's the big thing, is that he said the Packers weren't FaceTiming him. So Josh Allen figured this out. You just FaceTime Aaron Rodgers.
Just got to FaceTime him. That's it. He'll answer. No, but I mean, I've been such a fan of him, you know, as a little kid, you know, having Aaron Rodgers jerseys and trying to emulate what he does on the football field. And, you know, he's such a special player. I think he's the most gifted thrower of the football of all time. And to now be going against him twice a year and, you know, it's going to be battle.
Quick one for you. Best defense that you faced in your career?
That's a tough question. Well, my first start was against the, I think at the time, was the San Diego Chargers, who were pretty nails. They had, obviously, Bosa, who's an animal. They had Derwin James. They had Melvin Ingram coming off the edge. They were pretty good.
For an F1 newbie, I'm not one. I have a podcast. I saw you at the Miami race last year. What is your favorite thing about F1?
My favorite thing about, what was Danny Ricciardo? I know he's on the
grid. Yeah, you never know. He might be back in the mix.
I'm hoping so. It's just not the same without him. I will say that. But I think that there's so many details that go into place. And I think that it's kind of it's a microcosm of football where, you know, you don't really win the race on race day. You win it in qualifying and in practice. So it's the preparation that allows you to have that success on game day, on race day, whatever you want to call it. And I think that message can be easily applied to the game of football as well.
Yeah. Josh Allen, you're the Madden cover star. Anything else we need to know about Madden?
It's my favorite cover of all time.
not much of a surprise. Mine too. Josh Allen, thanks for coming so much on Sunday, buddy.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, Lindsay Jones is here. It's been a while. She went to Sweden. She went on vacation within America. Have you done work in the past month, or even given any thought to doing any work?
Are my bosses listening to this call?
No, I have not.
But other than, you know, the time in Sweden was work. I was learning about our company that we work for and meeting with a lot of our colleagues. But no, largely other than that, I've been completely logged off. I was at a dude ranch for a week learning how to be a cowboy. It was fantastic.
Like a city slicker situation? Are you familiar with city slickers?
I am. I am even older than you are, Kevin. But yes, that's I am. So yeah, kind of similar. But yeah, it was fantastic. Completely unplugged, riding horses. My kid got to be in a rodeo. It was great.
It's beautiful.
Highest, 5 stars.
I'm so
highest
happy.
Recommendations.
What a relaxation.
It was fantastic.
I'm just sitting in here in north of New York City raising my child, and I would love to be on a dude ranch. It'd be great.
So yeah, I just asked you what happened in the NFL in the last month.
Oh, you know.
What did I miss?
Unfortunately, we're both pathetically overprepared for anything we do. Yeah. And so we unfortunately can't mail it in. All right. So here's what we're going to do. Had a guest, obviously, a little before this. What we're going to do is we'd like to rank things here at The Ringer. The NFL likes to rank things. Content machine likes to rank things. We're going to do, I don't think I've ever seen this before. I don't think we've ever done it before anywhere on our platforms. Just want to rank top 5 franchises. Like, that's it. Everything. Bake it all in. And there were so many ways I wanted to look at this because at the beginning, I realized I was just ranking owners, which is not what this is and shouldn't be. And also, so many owners are bailed out by a coach. So many coaches are bailed out by a quarterback. So many coaches are bailed out by a GM. An owner is bailed out by a GM. A quarterback is bailed out by a GM in some cases, or a coach. That it all works together. And that's why I found this exercise, frankly, so fascinating. And there are teams that, you know, going through, great example, going through like most wins over the past decade, 5 years, 15 years, like the New Orleans Saints are all over that list. But nobody sits around, and they also, by the way, spend so much cash. And Nick Underhill was on this show a couple years ago and said that they do what's called mafia accounting on the salary cap because they spend so much with the cash. So, like, I don't think if you stop somebody on the street and said, are the Saints one of the best organizations in football, people would say, yes, definitely. But they're in the mix. They're in the mix. That's why I thought this was so cool. How did you approach this, pal?
Yeah, I would say so. My rankings are kind of fluid, I would say. But, I feel like the criteria are winning, both historical and recent. I think a lot of times when you see these type of rankings where it's, looking at, trying to come up with formulas to rank organizations, a lot of times it's like overall winning percentage or total Super Bowls, which is important, right? But I also don't think when we're talking about here, June of 2023, necessarily equates to like the best franchises right now. So I wanted to kind of combine winning from a historical level, but also, past decade, 10, 15 years. I also looked at stability in ownership, coaching, front office, quarterback to some extent, because I think the teams that have a lot of turnover at any and or multiple of those positions, as much as they might want to consider themselves a good organization, generally, if you have turnover at those places, you're not. So those were really the things that I looked at. In terms of, the overall best franchises. I'm curious. I feel like we'll have some of the same.
I think so too. But I also think that I have two questions about our criteria. Number one, you and I have been in a lot of NFL facilities, every NFL facility, if not mistaken. How much should vibes play into it? Like, I don't mean vibes-based. I just mean like we're in a facility, you're meeting secretaries and you're meeting chief of staff for the GM and the owner and the owner's guy and all of this stuff. And it's like, I feel like there's two separate lists almost where it's like when you're in a building, you feel a culture different than if you're just watching on Sunday. Did that play into it at all? I mean, you think about.
Yeah, a little bit. I think so. I mean, I think there's some teams that I just probably wouldn't consider because generally the vibes are bad and like people don't seem happy to work for there.
Sometimes you just go to a training camp and just like no one is into this. No one, like the coach isn't into it. The owner's not into it. Nobody's into it.
Yeah. I always think it's interesting too, when we're talking about organizations from top to bottom and over the last few years, not this year, now that I'm at The Ringer, but I spent a lot of time working on like a 40 under 40 list. At my previous job. And so you talk to a lot of people like behind the scenes that are working for, in community relations and social media and all of those places. And you can kind of feel like a culture like behind the scenes that sometimes doesn't really mesh with what's going on the field or in the front office. I think they're not on my list, so I'm not going to, but the Chargers are an example of that, where they're not a team that I have ranked here, but like there's a lot of people who like working for the Chargers. It's weird. It's like where they're doing some fun, but I would never, they're not on my list. I don't think they're, yes, those Chargers, but they're probably not even on like the top 15 of my list, because when I talk about winning, stability, those type of things, ownership,
and not firing a doctor for like a decade after he made mistake after mistake, who replaced a previous bad doctor.
But like, they're a place where a lot of times the vibes are good from like they moved on the employee level. Eventually, they finally did. He hasn't poked anybody in the heart in a while. It's fine.
I'd actually throw in the Chargers genre, I'd actually throw out, and this is different because this flows from ownership, throw out the Falcons. Like, everybody loves working for Arthur Blank. He spends.
Yep.
He, cash, he's not afraid to splash it. Like, but kind of same thing you're talking about. And I know Arthur Blank is a way better owner than the Spanos. So that's the difference here. But I think that same thing you're talking about. You just look at the resume and it's like, okay, well, he didn't win, which is 80% of this list. All right, let's get to your number five.
All right, I'm going to put the San Francisco 49ers. Are they on your list? You're kind of making a face at me.
They're not. Wait, they're on my next cut. They're on my first cut.
Well, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit so that we're not like entirely in sync here. So I've got the 49ers at five because I think they fit into a lot of these buckets that I'm talking about in terms of winning long-term. You know, they are one of the most successful overall franchises in terms of just times that they are playing for championships, all of the Super Bowls that they won during the Joe Montana and Steve Young era. They're constantly competing for championships now in the Kyle Shanahan regime. Obviously, they haven't gotten one. I think there have been a lot of reasons for that. But then when we talk about stability and, you know, in ownership in recent years, I mean, it has stayed within the same family. I think Jed York is kind of carving out an interesting niche for himself within NFL ownership. He's one of the youngest primary owners in the NFL. He's done some things differently than his predecessors in San Francisco, but also isn't afraid to kind of, you know, zig when the rest of the league is zagging a little bit. I think he has some stability and confidence to do things there. And, you know, otherwise, a lot of stability at coaching too. I mean, they have, you know, a pretty secure setup there now with Kyle Shanahan. So I just, and it's another place where I think it's well run. I think they do. They're a league leader in a lot of non-football things that they do in terms of, you know, social programs, community programs. I think people enjoy working there, playing there, that sort of stuff. So they were kind of my right on the bubble, but I'm putting them there at five.
Reason they're a cut for me, and I'd have, if we did a top 10, they'd be on my list. All the other ones, when we're doing five, you have to be pretty up there to get on the list. And for me, Kyle Shanahan was one of the best hires of the past decade. Put Sean McVay on that list. It's a short list. Andy Reid, obviously, Chiefs are on my list. That was the hire. But great hire. Before that, and we're going back, this is completely made up criteria, but I was looking at most wins over 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, 5 years, right? And you think about the Harbaugh mess, which, by the way, Harbaugh, great hire. But then that flows into Tom Sula, which flows into Chip Kelly, which flows into Kyle Shanahan, which stabilizes it. And so you can ding them a little bit for being in the wilderness for a few years. If you're just talking about just best franchises. Right now, very, very few franchises I'd rather be that I'd rather work for. The John Lynch hire was inspired from TV. Kyle Shanahan can make any quarterback into something. I'm just saying, if we're ranking infrastructure, the other teams on my list that made the list haven't had the misses, the big misses. Even before Harbaugh, Mike Singletary. I mean, there have been some big misses in San Francisco, which makes them not a bad franchise. They're a great franchise. They're just not a top five franchise.
I think that, and I think that's all totally fair.
All right.
Who you got at number five?
The Kansas City Chiefs. Most wins over the past 5 years, 10 more than anybody else. And what I think is fascinating, Lindsay, is I was talking to somebody recently, maybe in the last year, about the Chiefs. And I was kind of making fun of an organization, someone with the Chiefs. And I was making fun of a different organization, and they stopped me and they kind of said, as I'm wont to do, they stopped me and they're like, you know, we were a pretty average franchise before Patrick. If you just look at it, before Andy, before Patrick.
Before, I would say before Andy.
Sure, but yes, but they weren't a Super Bowl contender, even when Alex Smith was, you know, he turned Alex Smith into the best deep passer in the league for one season, literally by statistics. But pretty average playoff team, not much more. Then Patrick happens, and you A, transform your franchise because of it, but B, you let Patrick transform your franchise. You spend money, you get more aggressive in first round picks. You obviously spend $500 million to keep Patrick and keep him happy, and they'll probably have to adjust that contract as it goes forward. Keep Travis Kelce. The kind of combination of Brett Veach and his vision, Andy Reid, Brant Tillis on the cap. Like, there's something there where they just problem solve, and that's all you want in an organization. That's all you want in an organization. And so I do think that part of this is just the luck, frankly. And if it's not the first overall pick, it is luck of drafting Patrick Mahomes. But you figure out what to do next. That's why I've always, my big line on this is nobody ever wins a Super Bowl because they drafted a franchise quarterback. That's the starting point for a lot of things. It's what they figure out what to do next, which is determine whether or not you're a good franchise or a great franchise. Look at the Chargers. Look at your Los Angeles Chargers. They've got Justin Herbert and they haven't been able to do much with it. The Chiefs have taken a quarterback and made him the cornerstone of a franchise. And I don't think you can overstate how important that's been.
Yeah, I have them on my list too. I was going to put them at 4. So right in that kind of same range. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about, look, I mean, I think whoever it was that you were talking to about the Chiefs, about kind of where they were pre-Andy, was maybe even underselling kind of what a mess it was there for a while. 2012 was like the lowest point that almost any franchise has ever been at mm-hmm. for an organization.
Agreed.
Everything that went on with that kind of era, that the rock bottom that franchise hit in 2012, the amount of losing, everything that happened off field, was really, really awful. The Jovan Belcher mm-hmm. situation, I mean, was so incredibly tragic. And the way that they were able to kind of emerge from that, completely turn their franchise around, I think they deserve, you know, a ton of credit for that. And, you know, and part of that was, you know, actually the big part of that, the biggest part of that was Andy Reid became available mm-hmm. and they weren't going to leave without Andy Reid. Andy Reid would have had, he had other options. And
Arizona,
they kind of knew.
Remember that?
I do. Yeah.
And they were in the clubhouse for a while.
They knew what they wanted. They knew what they needed. And Andy Reid was exactly the right guy. And then you pair the right coach with the right quarterback, and all of a sudden you're set up for decades potentially of success. I mean, they're kind of on that trajectory now. So they're also a place that you go there and people are happy. I mean, vibes are pretty good, but vibes are really good when Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback and you're winning as many games as they are. But it's a cool place to be. It's a really unique setup that they have there, just in terms of the size of the market and the, you know, just how successful they are, how big Kansas City, you know, how big the Chiefs are to Kansas City, to the entire kind of region of Missouri. They're the only team now in the state of Missouri. I live in Denver, where people should, in theory, hate the Chiefs, and you walk around and you see people in Mahomes jerseys. It's pretty funny. Now, I mean, you just have to have just a ton of respect for the way that they've built that. So I also have them on my list. They were my number 4. So if you want to move on to your number 4.
No, real quick, is after Belichick leaving with a napkin from NYJ to New England, is Andy Reid's hire the second, since Belichick, the most important thing that's happened in football?
Ooh. I mean, I guess when you put it that, I mean, without the Mahomes part of it, I don't know. I don't know if you can separate those things out.
That's a chicken and egg thing, right? That's a chicken and egg thing. Like, Andy Reid not only took the chance, it's a first round pick, but he built something around Mahomes. He gave them the best schemes in football. And it was written in football heaven that this would happen. Like, that was an amazing pairing of those guys. Yeah. And so I think that Andy starts the runaway train, frankly.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's, you know, the fact that he's coached for his entire career, like, he's a contemporary of Bill Belichick, the guy who gets all the credit for being arguably, you know, the best coach of all time. You know, he probably doesn't get quite as much credit, but the way that he is updated his offense and evolved as a coach through so many years, through his time in Philadelphia, yep. through the different quarterbacks that he had there, coaching Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick and, you know, all the way through Alex Smith and now yep. to Patrick Mahomes. Like, in the way that they keep changing, I mean, it's just so exciting for football. And I was actually having a conversation on a horseback ride at the Dude Ranch
classic.
Last week.
Classic Dude believe Ranch it was, combo.
So you got to talk, you get to talk about like football. You get to talk about anything, but okay. a lot of the, you know, the Wranglers are all like college students and a lot of them are in the SEC and, you know, watch a lot of football. So we start talking about football and somebody asked me, well, like, who's your favorite team to watch? Just if you could just sit down and watch like yeah. any team, who are you going to watch? And I thought about it for, you know, 30 seconds or something. And I said, the Chiefs. And it's not just because Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. It was because all of the stuff that he and Andy Reid do together. So, you know, I know we're talking overall organizations and stuff, but they have two kind of A-plus people in the most forward-facing spots in that organization. And I don't know, there isn't really anybody else in the league that's set up the way that they are with that.
My number four is the Baltimore Ravens. So this might be controversial in the sense that the Chiefs keep winning Super Bowls and the Ravens don't. But Ozzie Newsome to Eric DaCosta is exactly what you want from a succession plan. Letting John Harbaugh, and I'm going to get to this on some of my other stuff here later, but like when things were going rough with John Harbaugh, they just kind of block it out. They don't stoke the flames. They don't leak that they don't leak crazy stories. They don't do the now they tell a story where they just call up the local beat writer and just slander him and hurt his leverage in contract negotiations or like some teams. I don't know, but everything just seems to be running on the right track. They draft Lamar Jackson. They change everything about their offense and then it stops working and they fire their offensive coordinator after giving Greg Roman ample time to fix it. They get the quarterback under contract. They didn't cover themselves in glory during that, but all is well that ends well. There's just so many decisions that they've made that have led to winning over the past 20 years. And you know, they have two Super Bowls in that time period. 22 years. They have two Super Bowls in that time period. Like this is just how you run a team.
I think that's fair. They were in my like very first tier of cuts. And now I'm like playing with my rankings.
Wow. I'm in your head.
In time. I know you are in my head, but I think it was interesting the way you brought up about kind of just like where they do their business behind the scenes. I thought the Lamar Jackson situation was just, it was very telling just in terms of the way that it played out, the confidence that they seemed to have all along that he was going to be their quarterback. And I'm thinking back to the owners meetings in March that neither of us were at, which is weird that because you and I have spent a lot of time together at owners meetings over the years, but watching that John Harbaugh press conference or the, you know, the breakfast where they sit around the table. And it was basically the same time that Lamar Jackson had like put out his like goodbye letter to Baltimore saying like he'd requested a trade and he wanted out. And there was just a ton of panic and Harbaugh's like, it's fine. We're good. And that's the sign of a confident coach and a confident organization that just kind of knows that they're going to be able to get this done.
The owner's meeting breakfast is always at 8 a.m. And one of them is always after the Monday night, which is when there's a cocktail party that extends into the early mornings. And in my younger years, be careful here, I didn't make a lot of owner's breakfasts.
Your previous bosses are going to be very disappointed in you at this
point. Didn't make a lot of coaches' breakfast because my viewpoint was, let's just plow through on the sourcing the night before and everybody's at the hotel bar and that they're more, let's say, open to communicating different things at the hotel bar at 1 a.m. than they are at the owner's breakfast a couple hours later.
I've seen coaches miss the coach's breakfast.
That's what
I'm
I was
not going to drop any names.
I would also say that I've seen coaches very late at the hotel bar. And then the next day, some poor beat writer is like, oh, my coach didn't show. And I'd say, you know, I think I might know why that happened.
Or the poor PR guy who has to be like, yeah, he came down
he's
with
sick.
A little stomach bug.
Yep. He's got a little stomach bug.
Like,
I'm
sure he is.
We're going to get you with him later. We're going to get you with him. He's going to be by the couch over there. All right. So let's move on from NFL boozing rumors.
That's a different rankings
that
for
is
later.
A different ranking.
Deeper into the offseason.
Who is your number three?
All right. At number three, I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers, who Are they on your list? I'm wondering if they're on your list or if they were on your first.
You're reading a lot into my face.
I really am. I really am. Because you're making the, you're judging me.
I think you're nervous about, I think you're changing your list on the fly. This is unbelievable.
A little bit. Yeah. And I was having a hard time exactly where to put them because of the, it's been a minute since they've actually won a Super Bowl or been in even an AFC championship game. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have them here at three, just because when we're talking about some of those categories, the criteria that I was looking at here, right? Recent wins, historic wins, stability at all of these places, ownership, coaching, front office, and then quarterback. Obviously, there's been turnover at quarterback recently. I think we still have some questions about the long-term quarterback plan, if Kenny Pickett is going to be that guy. But when you look at organizations who just tend to do everything right, who are the organizations that other teams look to about how they want to hire, how they want to have a coach build out his entire staff, what they want from their front office in terms of stability there. You talked about it with the Ozzie Newsome to Eric DaCosta. They're kind of working on that now in Pittsburgh, where Kevin Colbert retired last year. They did this massive, you know, really, really wide search, ended up with Omar Khan, who had been in the organization for a really long time. This is a place who knows who they are. They know how they operate. They know what their values are. They get people in there in the building and they do not leave because they treat their people well. They don't want to leave. They're not actively out looking for other jobs generally. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's, people are happy there. It's like a good, it's just a good place to be. And when we talk about like model franchises in the NFL, there's a bunch of teams who think they are model franchises in the NFL, and the Steelers, they are.
A lot of owners try to pick the Rooney's brains, and it's really hard to be the Rooney's because they promote from within and they know, you said, they have an identity and they stick with it. They don't hire a lot of people. They have, I think, fairly small staff in relation to everybody mm-hmm. else. And I think that they see that as an advantage. They certainly, any NFL team has the capability to spend more money on staff. And I think that they like to keep it pretty casual. And you mentioned Omar Khan. I completely agree that kind of promoting from within is an extension of that identity. And I also say that, like, if you were to ding them on anything, it's maybe some of the assistant coach hires they've had, offensive coordinators who hold on too long, some stubbornness within the coaching ranks, but they just, they win all the time. Their draft picks always exceed expectations. They have great player development. Like, they have what you want. And they don't overthink things. Everything is just so, you want to talk about vibes, go into their training camps in Latrobe. It's just, everything is fine. Like, they don't treat things like it's the end of the world. They're like, you know, they don't have Secret Service guys ready to tackle you if you steal a state secret. They're eating in the cafeteria with everybody else. Like, it just feels like football did 40 years ago. And I was on Mina's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking about Mike Tomlin. I was talking about just his general vibe and how he just loves coaching, and he loves actually the finer points of hand placement and all that stuff. And the thing I said then, which I think is probably true of the organization, I mean, not probably true, it is true of the organization, which is Mike Tomlin will be a good coach in 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, 2020. And the Steelers are the exact same because they've, by the way, done that. The Rooneys have produced a winner all of the time. They've had three coaches since the 60s, and the Browns, you know, I think part of it is, okay, if Jimmy Haslam wanted to become the Rooneys tomorrow, he wouldn't know where to start. He's hired bad people all the time. He's probably still got some bad people in the organization who are just left over from a previous regime, whatever. Like, part of it is it builds on itself. You hit on one or two hires. I mean, we're talking about the Andy Reid thing. You hit on one or two hires and it becomes a snowball rolling downhill. What's Chuck Pagano say? Rolling ball, butcher knives, right? Like, that's what happens when you're a good organization, is things just start, good things start happening to you. They hire the next person. You trust your people. Okay, then we're there. It's very hard to get to. The Steelers are A, there, and B, don't screw it up. They do not screw it up. They're number two on my list.
Okay. I was going back and forth between three and two, and ultimately I bumped them to three just because of recent-ish last decade Super Bowl championships. So who's your number three then?
The New England Patriots. 736 is their winning percentage in the last 20 years. 736. They win a hell of a lot of games. Now, I'm going to ding them because we're making this in 2023. They've gone downhill. Robert Kraft is angry. Joe Judge was their offensive coordinator last year with some sort of Matt Patricia influence. They ran the classic Judge Patricia offense last year. It seemed to have a huge impact on their young quarterback, which I think how you treat your young players is usually indicative. I mentioned the Steelers player development, indicative of how you function as an organization. Do you make players better once they get in the building? And the answer normally is yes in New England, and it wasn't for Mac Jones last year in the second year. I think you can they solved the problem after 1 year, all that stuff, but putting him in that position was real bad. They don't have Tom. Hey, remember, we're not doing ownership here. Not having Tom Brady matters. The relationship at the end, and reading all of those books, whether it's Seth Wickersham's book or Jeff Benedict's book or whatever, the Brady stuff, it felt like it could have been patched up a little better in the latter days, and maybe we avoid the couple of Tampa years. I don't know. I wasn't there, but reading the tea leaves, it felt like there could have been a charm offensive 5-6 years earlier that would have prevented some of that stuff. But Bill Belichick is still the best to ever do it. They still are going to win a lot. Like, that's the thing I think that is important about this conversation. It's like the Patriots still win. They just don't win like they used to. And so right now, if I'm drafting franchises to take over, if someone says, here, you get a franchise, which one are you taking over to run? The Patriots would be 3 for me.
Yeah. So I had them at 2. And as you could see, as I was tinkering with my list in real time here, I was going back and forth between these 2 teams with Pittsburgh and New England. And ultimately it was like championships is where I felt was where I came down there. This is one where I kind of give, and this is not about the Roonies at all. This is not a slight to the Roonies at all. Because I think this is a very clear to me, like top tier of NFL franchises. Robert Kraft, I think kind of, this is where he gets like a little bit of a bonus right here. I think just in terms of like his input in the league and the business dealings of the league and the influence that the Patriots have league wide on what gets done, policies that are happening, I think makes them a pretty important organization. I'm curious about the vibes. How do you feel about the vibes with New England? I'm kind of now second guessing.
Because we never get to do the things we get to do in other facilities, like walk around the hallways.
True.
Meet people we're not supposed to meet, have conversations in the hallway, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different. I think reading some of, I do certainly know people in New England. It's a different environment. And reading, I think Seth Wickersham's done a good job as anybody with kind of revealing the office workplace culture there. And it's always funny because what was the line? I think it was that whenever something is happening in New England, Belichick just gives his assistants busy work so they can't gossip. Like, it's a little different than it is.
Yeah, it's a different place.
In Atlanta and in Miami. I think that, I think it was Lane Johnson who said they don't have any fun there. I disagree with that. I think that winning Super Bowls is generally fun. But when you can't provide that, maybe people start to get more upset. And so we'll see if the bottom actually ever does fall out, we'll see if anybody starts to poke holes in that culture. But I don't think it's a bad vibe. I just think it's a different vibe.
It's a different vibe. I'm going to be very curious moving forward what kind of the long-term succession plan is there. And that's not something that I think Bill Belichick is ever going to reveal to us, or Bob Kraft is really going to ever reveal to us. But Kraft is one of kind of the older owners. I mean, I think his family is well set up with his Jonathan, right? Jonathan Kraft.
Yep.
Would probably be the next, they're pretty, I think the top is well organized, but what's going to happen when we talk about coach, when your coach is everything else in the organization?
Yeah.
In terms of personnel, coaching, everything. Where do they go when Bill ultimately decides that he's going to be done?
I talked to Jonathan Kraft right when I got on the NFL beat 2012, right around the time the Cardinals almost hired Andy Reid, all sorts of crazy stuff happened. And I said, what's your role? Like, what is the Kraft family's role in football operations? I think this is a great guidepost to how owners should function within the GM coach setup. He said he doesn't want to make any decisions. He wants to make sure, I mean, I'm sure he does make some decisions and he has been involved more, on the Brady contract and stuff like that. The ownership gets more involved. But he said he feels like his job is to make sure every question and every angle has been considered. And then once it has, he just leaves it up to his guys. And I think that was an interesting way to put it, because he just comes in and says, hey, have we thought about this? Have we thought about that? And as long as the answer is yes, he's going to let Bill do his thing. I don't know if anything's changed in the last decade, but that was the way it is. And I think that's kind of the model for how a good ownership should be, which is, let's make sure that the process is correct and all of this stuff, but otherwise we're going to let our guys determine what needs to be determined, which I think is probably what more owners should be doing. So new ownership syndrome is real, and you get into a situation where you make $7 billion, $8 billion, $30 million, $30 billion, doesn't matter. It's so inconceivable to me that somebody has $30 billion. I keep saying million dollars, and that's also inconceivable to me, depending on how my next contract goes. But you go 2-15 and you become the butt of the joke, and you've been the most powerful person in the room, in the world in some cases, and nobody cares when you get in that building. And you become a joke. And when you get in those owners meetings and there's 32 of those folks, they've all got $8 billion. And guess what? You're behind the Roonies and the Maras because you don't win enough. And that, I think, is a shock to the system, and you go crazy. And so the idea of having stability, not reaching when you buy a team like that, it's a skill to be a good owner, and the crafts have it.
And I think it's the NFL is at a really interesting point when we're talking about ownership right now, where there wasn't change in ownership groups for a long time. I mean, you'd get one here and there. I mean, obviously the Bills sale, which was not quite 10 years ago. But now we're in this point where there have been a lot of organizations that have gone through ownership changes recently. And we're getting these new, extremely rich, like rich on a different level of rich ownership, largely because of the NFL's ownership rules that you have to be at a whole different tier to even be eligible to purchase an NFL team. And, you know, now, you know, David Tepper has had it's been a rough go for David Tepper since he came into Carolina. I had some conversations with people in the, like, later in the fall of last season about kind of the wake up call that it was for the Walton family when they mm-hmm. purchased the Broncos. And just the Walton Penner Group, and just like, wow, this is different than anything else that we've done before. And, you know, they're throwing a ton of money at things, but it was just kind of like, running a sports organization is completely different than anything. And now we're about to have the Washington Commanders with another really rich group coming in, who, although Josh Harris, to his credit, like, he's run professional sports organizations before, but it's just going to be a really interesting dynamic, I think, in the league now, where there's a lot of new people who are going to be in these meetings and in these rooms, different tier of wealth, some different backgrounds, maybe not lifelong sports ownership in their family like some of these other organizations. So I think it'll be interesting just to watch over the next 5 years what that means for league politics.
I'm gonna push back on one thing that is a very common trope, and I've said it a million times because I used to believe this in ownership circles, which is that running a sports franchise is different. And because it is, but it shouldn't be than running a business. Because if you're a good CEO, you're a good founder, whatever you want to call it now, you put people in place and you let them do their job. How is it different than anything else? Like, if you have a $30 billion company, it's too big to micromanage everything, even if you tried. And so you put your people in place and you let them do their job. And that's the way football teams should work. And the problem is, when you get to ownership, you hear so much that it's so different. It's a different can of worms. Oh boy, you wait for this. And the actual solution, I think, is being like, no. I got this. I'm just going to hire good people and just set the watch and just let it go.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them just don't hire good people.
I think I could very easily. I don't think I have the gene to get there, but I do think I could manage and consolidate power a la a Jack Easterby. Like, I think I'd be pretty good at that. Because I think I can give them enough guidance to where they would keep me around. Wow. And I could just keep building on it. I just don't think I'm like, I don't really have that propeller that would get me to the top ranks in a billionaire's ear. Does that make sense?
You'd Once end up there, getting kicked out at some point.
Or just not go. I just would not go into the office. Like, do you know how present you'd have to be to be Jack Easterby?
Yeah.
Say what you will about Jack Easterby, but he was in the mix. I don't have that kind of thing. I'm an extremely hard worker, but not
I did not think we would have any Texans mentions on a discussion about the best organizations in football. So this was the wild card that I was waiting.
All right. It sounds
the bottom organizations will be another podcast.
It sounds like we have the same number one.
The Philadelphia Eagles.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you were going to go somebody completely random, and that'd be amazing. For that, but
real quick, before
we get into
the Eagles, can you just do your first cuts?
So, my first cuts were a couple teams that we already talked about: Baltimore, and then Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers were there, and then I think a team that's been rising that is kind of in that next year for me is Buffalo.
Me too. I had the Niners there. Rams,
yeah,
were in the mix for me. They were a cut, but they were in the mix for me. And then I'm just going to throw this out there. You talk about stability. You talk about winning. You want to talk about making all the right hires. Seattle Seahawks are in that mix.
Yep.
And then the other one I'd like to throw out, just as far as, I know this sounds a little weird. This is actually more of a vibes pick. As far as they spend money, they have good facilities, they have good people in place. They do win at a above average clip. Minnesota Vikings. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
I don't think that used to be true, but it is true now.
Yeah, I think all of those are fair. And I think the Rams are interesting, I think, is from like an ownership perspective. Maybe I just have to shout out the Denver Nuggets. I just want to talk about the Denver Nuggets.
Stan Kroenke keeps winning championships, even though everybody complains about him.
Everybody complains about him. He comes on television to like accept a trophy, and people are like, "Oh, it's Stan," you know.
And he doesn't know how to work a microphone.
You cannot watch Denver Nuggets games if you live in Denver, unless if you have Comcast. But like, their teams just keep on winning. They win indoor lacrosse league championships. They were in the mix for an EPL. They won a Stanley Cup last year. They were in the mix. Arsenal was like in the mix.
As a Tottenham Hotspur fan, I knew they were not in the mix. They looked mathematically in the mix, but vibes-wise, they were not in the mix.
But yeah, shout out Jokic, the real MVP.
I would say, going back to what I just said a minute ago, is it possible that Stan Kroenke, old Silent Stan, as they call him over in London, does exactly what we're proposing, which is hire people like Kevin Demoff and Sean McVay and Les Snead and say, "Hey guys, looks like you've got this. I'll see you later."
I think there's a bit of that. And they're an organization too, that this doesn't apply to football quite as much, but when you're talking about kind of like family ownership structure, there's some pretty clear, like, this is what Josh Kroenke is going to do. He's much more involved with the Avalanche and the Nuggets than Stan is, but is now going to be, at some point, he'll probably be doing more on the football side. But they just keep winning. Lots and lots of trophies.
The one thing I have heard is that whenever Stan is in the Rams facility, which is not that often, if I'm not mistaken, he has a huge ass dog, and the dog has a huge ass bowl in the facility, like a huge ass bowl.
I mean, as a huge ass dog should. I'm not going to give him a little ass bowl.
I honestly don't know how you calibrate dog bowl sizes. This seemed like maybe a little much, but then again, I don't know how big the dog is, you know? So I'm an unreliable narrator here. All right, let's talk about the Eagles? Let's talk about the Eagles. It reminds me a bit to go to the college game of LSU, where if you take the job, you're expected to win a Super Bowl, and you might pretty quickly. And it's funny because only Doug Peterson did, but Andy Reid made NFC title game after NFC title game. Nick Sirianni was a quarter away from winning the Super Bowl this year and had basically a free pass to the Super Bowl. The roster is awesome. They have not only coach success after coach success, but in general, with the exception of a few misses just because of sort of the calendar injuries, quarterback success after quarterback success. The Jalen Hurts pick was destroyed at the time. Howie Roseman, I think, is the best general manager in football. They get value out of everything. The things they did contract-wise have been ripped off by everybody. They sign guys as soon as they possibly can. And sometimes I would say, oh, they signed Carson Wentz. First of all, Carson Wentz was playing an MVP level. Second of all, guess what happened? They were able to spin off the Carson Wentz deal very quickly and make a Super Bowl almost, be on the Super Bowl path almost instantaneously after a little bit of a retool. It is embarrassing that they had the tanking thing that Jason Kelce had to go off on a couple of years ago. That was a low light, but kind of everybody has those sort of misses over a long haul. So I don't know what else you could ask for. I mean, more Super Bowls, surely. But if we're talking about 2023, they've got as good a chance as anybody in an NFC that is weak as hell. Like, this is what you want your franchise to be. With very few exceptions, every team's fan base should be jealous of what the Eagles have on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned some of those missteps. And those are the type of mistakes that would have doomed a lot of franchises for a decade. And the Eagles, they were just a speed bump. Smart organizations recognize when they've made a mistake and are able to move forward from it pretty quickly. You know, and whether that's taking a big cap hit for the Carson Wentz deal, but you got out of it and you figured it out and you had conviction in some of your moves. I think, you know, and Sheil and Ben Solek talk about this a lot on Philly Special. I know Sheil wrote about this a lot in the run-up to the Super Bowl last year. That, you know, this is an organization that, and this is what every team will talk about what they want to do, is that you want to be built for to win now and to win from now on. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles do that better than just about anybody. And, you know, they're really smart with their finances. They're smart with their drafting. They've made some really good long-term decisions where they've set themselves up to win. Obviously, in 2022, I think they're in a really good position in 2023, but they're now set up, I think, to win for quite a while, for whatever that next generation of Eagles football is going to look like.
Totally agree. Is there anybody, I know this wasn't in the show notes, so I'm just going to completely freelance as a, as somebody who just,
I love
you know,
it. Let's go.
Is just an awful host. So anybody you think is going to be on this list in 5 years that is not on it now or not even consideration now? Is there ownership sort Ooh. Of infrastructure where you're saying, okay, couple years from now, we're going to be saying this team is without a doubt a model franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I think Buffalo, I mean, I kind of mentioned them really briefly as a team mm-hmm. that I had kind of in that next tier. I think they're kind of moving in that direction when we're talking about stability at a front office, stability at a coaching staff. You have the quarterback who hopefully he will continue to be transformative. So I think they're kind of one of those teams that they seem to be doing things the right way. So they're probably that team that I have in that tier. I'm not sure if I have. Now I'm trying to think.
I have a couple of, first of all, I just realized this. How embarrassing is it that we didn't even think about the Giants?
I thought you were going to say that we didn't even talk about the Cowboys.
Oh, I mean, come on. I mean, we know this. Listen, the Cowboys draft really well and they win a lot, but we know the structural flaws to where we're not going to say that's a model organization.
Well, the problem I think for the Giants, or the reason that we didn't talk about the Giants,
too,
is that
they only
fit in one of those buckets. It's a different bucket for the Colts. I think for the Giants, I think when you say like, oh, the Mara family,
yeah.
in terms of a family that has tremendous influence in the NFL, the stability, the way that other owners look at the Mara family. But I think even the Maras right now would say like, we haven't been. I mean, it's been a while.
I bet the Maras would say we're in the mix.
we're still in the mix, but. You know, I think their dip was big over the last decade. And,
Agreed.
You know, we were just talking about how the Eagles were able to kind of dig themselves out of a mistake pretty quickly. The Giants fell into a pretty big rut and it's taken them a really long time to climb out.
Jeff Saturday disqualified Jim Irsay for the next decade, I would say. And a couple other of the mistakes as well. Carson Wentz is a through line. How you treated Carson Wentz is a through line to all of this stuff. All right. So let me throw out a couple of contenders. Number one, I know this is crazy, but it goes back to my old adage, three types of owners know how to win and do win. Okay. Crafts, Rooney's, all that stuff. Know how to win, but don't want to. We know who some of those are, or don't care. Nobody doesn't want to win, but they're not going to spend the extra $10 million. They're not going to upgrade the facilities. They're not going to re-sign the offensive coordinator if he's asking for too much money, all that kind of stuff. Right. Okay. That's the second group. Third group. Wants to win, doesn't know how. Okay. Two people I'd circle there or two franchises I'd circle with owners who want to, I think, from what I hear in the league, want to devote the resources, but it hasn't clicked yet. Number one would be Jacksonville. Okay. Building a new stadium, Trevor Lawrence, Doug Peterson. Don't love the Trent Baalke thing, but I don't know. The other infrastructure seems to be in the mix. And we talked earlier about coaches bailing out GMs or owners bailing out GMs or quarterbacks bailing out coaches, whatever. Maybe Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence are enough and Trent Baalke does his drafting on wingspan thing and it ends up working out. Okay. Carolina is the other. Okay. If they hit on Bryce Young and Frank Reich is the guy, we could be laughing at the early missteps of Frank Reich. Having said that, could have said that about Jimmy Haslam when he's just going burp, 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 and like Jimmy Haslam just never going to get it. It's never going to get it. Denver with Sean Payton, kind of what we were talking about. They want to spend the money. They have the resources. They have good people in place. Now that Sean Payton is there, he'll improve Russell Wilson. So that's kind of it for me as far as circling. I mean, I don't, we'll see what happens with Miami and Mike McDaniel. But everybody else, I kind of know where they are.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the Broncos are
Commanders,
interesting.
Commanders, by the way, you know, as well. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, shoot. I mean, they're going to have a grown-up in charge. They're going to have a guy who wants to win, wants to invest, wants to put money into their stadium, get a new stadium, all the stuff that Dan Snyder was not able to do. Looking forward to that being done. And Kevin Clark, call him about it, whenever that happens. No pressure. It's fine. I don't think I have anybody else.
I can't wait
to read out. I'm very much
there's some teams where I'm just like, no, this isn't going to happen. You guys can fit. We'll do that in another episode. All right. Thank you to Richie Bozick for production up. Lindsay Jones back from the Dude Ranch. Talk to you soon, pal.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.